Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
February 9, 2023, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, and this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me say this. Anyway, Thursday, second to last broadcast day of the week for the regular network here at Ocelli.com, and you were just listening to the Jack Blood Show live, if you're hearing us live, but most of you catch it, you know, later on, further on down the stream, etc., etc. So, anyway, no matter who you are, when you are, where you are, or what time it is, welcome. Now, we're a little change up here. Yesterday, I had a brief conversation with Mike Swanson. Didn't expect to be talking about Vietnam and what's coming out in the books lately. But that's what we got last night. I've got Larry Hancock, the author. You know, again, I'll tell you, so many books, not going to get to all of them. But let's mention a few. Creating Chaos, Shadow Warfare. I wonder why it is I'm going through these. Shadow Warfare, Surprise Attack. Didn't even mention the JFK stuff because tonight is not about JFK. Although I'm waiting on somebody to come to me with the Chinese conspiracy regarding the JFK assassination in the ludicrous file. I'm figuring we'll get there. I mean, after all, L. Ron Hubbard is somehow involved, according to one email person as of late writing to me. And, of course, all the other usual suspects, and I need to know about them because I'm not speaking the truth about the JFK assassination. But I'll get to my email and my hate letters later. It is what it is, and some of you, I know, listen to this show because you can't stand what I have to say. So hopefully you'll appreciate Larry Hancock, larry-hancock.com. Go there, check out his work. Go on Amazon. I'll give you links. There'll be plenty of them. Oh, and we do advertise a book on here called In Denial. Yes, we do. Also authored by Larry Hancock, who sometimes co-authors with Stu Wexler and all that. But anyway, not the point of tonight's discussion. Actually, it's current events with Larry Hancock, and I'm really glad that we have him along and also early in the show. This is good, although, you know, Mike Swanson, it's always great to talk to him, but we got him last night, so we got Larry early tonight. Larry, first off, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Chuck, and I would like to point out for this particular conversation, at least once we can say without a doubt that this started in China.
Ah, this started in China. So obviously, we're going to have to reference the balloon or balloons. And I always love, Larry, I'm just going to give you a little bit of commentary before I let you break this down, because, again, we're going to have to talk about active measures, covert actions. Gee, all these things are going to have to get mentioned once again. But, you know, I loved watching and really trying to sort it out. I mean, I was sitting there going, why in the hell is a balloon floating, you know, over these odd parts of the United States? What in the world is going on? Why would the Chinese use a balloon? A little confused. I thought it was a fake story when it was first passed to me, to be honest with you. I thought, come on, this has got to be a joke. But apparently not a joke. Recriminations here. You know, Biden showed his weakness by not shooting it down sooner. All of the political footballs came out a flying like it was a game of dodgeball. Or maybe when you were in school, Larry, they might have called it bombardment or something like this. Either way, balls flying back and forth, people throwing different accusations at each other about how they should have behaved, what was known, when did they know it, did we actually pick up on it, are we vulnerable to an attack from a balloon, the invasion of our sovereign airspace, etc., etc. And frankly, Larry, what do I even make of this weird thing that happened? And by the by, you know, don't forget that Trump actually, you know, when he was in office, didn't do anything about a couple of balloons, too. Because maybe this is an ongoing program. Or are we getting a look at something that maybe all of China's neighbors have had to deal with for quite a long time? They claimed it was a weather balloon, etc. Man, I mean, what a mess, Larry. What is it that came to your mind? I want to start with that question. When you first saw reports of this, I mean, Did you almost take that sort of like, I can't believe that I'm seeing a mysterious weather balloon is a point of interest here and is actually happening here in 2023? I mean, what was your thoughts about this, considering that you've done analysis on all these things? You have done your time looking at various types of operations by the U.S. government, against the U.S. government, okay, against us, by us, all of that, right? What was your first snap impression, though, when, like, the story just kind of came across your awareness? Larry Hancock, I'm wondering, because I'm telling you now, I really did. My initial reaction was this has to be, like, a made-up thing. This almost sounds silly. Onion story, you know, whatever. What was your initial thought? I mean, really, your first, like, how do I take this
in? My initial thought was, it's kind of like the discussion that we've had before, Chuck, and we were talking about Russia and Putin and strategies and tactics. My initial thought was they blew it because they have been immensely successful over the last 5 to 8 years with a significant escalation in their active measures in regard to intelligence collection, weapons testing, and they've done it under the radar. And they've gotten away with it. They certainly got away with it during the last administration. But the people in the intelligence community, quite frankly, haven't been able to or haven't had the leverage to raise this to the issue that it has really become. Because this is the second thought that occurred to me is, you know, hubris. Basically, you and I have talked about Putin with his tactics in Syria and Northern Africa and Central Africa all working so beautifully. And then he screws up by taking it all out of the closet and kind of like rolling the dice for the whole thing. And it becomes obvious. And suddenly it's a change in what was a covert plan that was really working. And the Chinese have been doing the same thing. There's some good articles being written on this now, but I think it's safe to say that for at least the last 5 years, they've becoming more and more aggressive in deploying balloons, if you will, smaller balloons, not balloons of this sort, but monitoring surveillance balloons with some transmission capabilities, especially to their satellite network, which they now have in place. There's almost no doubt that they sailed one or more ships into Navy test ranges and deployed drone swarms. There's almost no doubt that they deployed drone swarms near the same ICBM bases in the northern U.S. that they flew this balloon over. And we actually have no doubt now the FBI has confirmed it, although you haven't seen the headline. You have seen headline stories, but they haven't drawn the response they should have, that the Chinese did indeed, as we feared they would, plant electronics in their cell phone equipment that was put in place by commercial companies around our ICBM fields that would have been capable of responding to and interrupting our command and control transmissions. So, in all honesty, my folks were, they were doing a really good job of being very aggressive with signals intelligence and surveillance, and then they did just, I guess they thought they could get away with anything. Somebody did, because this let the cat out of the bag.
Well, and right away, I got somebody in my chat room that said, you know, that it was all BS, that there was balloons, before Biden took office and all that. Now, I don't know one way or the other, honestly. And also, I would say that publicly, what it is we're allowed to know and exactly what encroachment, I mean, outside of when major hacking attacks have taken place, where they blamed it on different foreign entities, you know, again, it's difficult to really unravel that as far as the reality versus the reporting. So I want to say
we've known
front,
about
though.
The balloons, Chuck. The posters were out to one. I mean, I 3 years ago, we saw photos of large mm-hmm. Chinese blimp-type balloons being flown over Guam, being flown in the Western Pacific.
Sure.
So this is the culmination. This is probably the largest, most substantial balloon flight directly over. You know, when I say directly over, the key thing is they managed to maneuver this sucker, it appears, right over our most strategic weapon sites. Mm-hmm. The ICBM fields up north, Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, where the B-2s are staged from, the only place the B-2s are staged from, and over northern Louisiana,
right,
where we have our other, all the major strategic STRATCOM bases were within the venue of signals intelligence collection of this balloon. So it was, right. It's unique in that it was so obvious and so blatant, and even the path is blatant. I mean, I don't know anybody that understands military strategy that would have looked at that balloon path and said, well, geez, it's clear what they're doing. And what they were doing was signals intelligence.
Right.
Well, that's fair enough. Yeah. But I was just going to say that, you know, some of these people that they bring out, you know, as military experts, right, to comment on this, immediately wanted to let us know that, look, this thing was jammed the whole way. They did not succeed in their mission, which was signals, intelligence. Maybe a quick, you know, explanation of what you mean sure. by signals, intelligence, and yep. what it is that they were, as we're being told anyway, this was the apparent reason for yep. this thing.
We have some good evidence of this, of that story now. Mm-hmm. Okay, basically, in this business, there is what you would call passive intelligence, where you put something in the area of your adversary and you kind of record what they're doing, what transmissions they're making, what frequencies they're using, and you try to get a grip on their patterns of usage, you know, where the headquarters are, where the remote units are, how that sort of thing. We do that to the Chinese. We do it to the Russians. That's been standard signals intelligence for decades now. We started right after World War II, and I actually cover a lot of those in the book Surprise Attack of how we went about doing that. But the next stage really is more important because it's something that's referred to as ferreting, where you actually fly your equipment in what might be considered maybe not a direct threat posture, but it comes close enough to targets to stimulate them to go into defense mode. So they activate their radars, they scramble fighters, and you not only, you get a very active picture of what signals are used to do that. You know, where are the radar stations? Where, you know, they're not just keeping quiet, now they're responding to you. All of that collects key information about where bases are, what frequencies are used, where types of equipment are. This is signals intelligence. And in terms of signals intelligence, obviously, it's better if you can do it closer. You get more. Most signals intelligence, in the beginning, most signals intelligence was done by aircraft flying reasonably low. Then we got to the point now where we can do a lot of signal intelligence with low Earth orbiting satellites. Again, not the big high range satellites, but low and fast and setting up constellations. Our Navy was one of the first to really put up a network of signals intelligence satellites to look at what was going on out in the oceans. But this is signals intelligence is scooping up transmissions that appear to be related to the military. And then if you can really get them responding to you, it gets even better. I think the second point, part of what you mentioned is there are several ways to defeat signals intelligence. Excuse me. One of the clearest ways is you jam the device that's collecting signals so that it can't, it's just got noise. All it's doing is picking up noise. Mm-hmm. And you make it ineffectual. So jamming is a technique that's been around for ages. And if you know what frequencies are in use and you get a sample, it's easy to turn on jamming. We have aircraft that are equipped for jamming, electronics aircraft that are equipped for jamming to see where jamming signals are coming from and, mm-hmm. and to do it themselves.
Right.
One of the things I think I sent an excellent article to you from my military blog, the U-2, our U-2s have pods on them that can be, the U-2 can be equipped as a signals intelligence device where it's picking up transmitted signals. And it also has a jamming pod.
Right.
So in this instance, we know from actual tracking that we did put U-2s over that balloon in a position where they could start saying the balloon would in this instance, most likely would be transmitting to Chinese satellites. So we put a U-2 in a position so it could see what directional signals were being sent, whether they were. You can quickly tell, is this really weather telemetry? Because telemetry looks like one thing, and encrypted intelligence looks like something entirely different.
Right.
So you can tell what's going on. You could have, then you want to monitor it for a while to make sure that they're not trying to fake you out by, I'm a weather balloon, and now I'm something else entirely. So you've got to do some monitoring periodically to find out what's going on, but in the interim, you can jam it whenever you choose to jam it. That's why sometimes devices that aren't quite so prominent as this balloon might actually be better for signals intelligence. And there's reason, as we just talked about, there's been a pattern of the Chinese launching smaller balloons mm-hmm. and in over different flight paths, nothing this dramatic. Over Hawaii, for example, again, we've seen pictures of, we know that, I think it was about 2 years ago, that there were F-22s scrambled out of Hawaii to go after an unknown object. It's almost certain now that it was one of these high altitude balloons, because the F-22 is an ideal, very high altitude interceptor that could deal with it. So to answer you, that's a bit of a description of signals intelligence, what it consists of, and how you deal with it. But one of the things that you don't do is if you fail to collect enough data from the platform that's conducting signals intelligence, you've really missed an opportunity because you don't know what it's looking at. You don't know what it's collecting. You can't profile it. And that's one of the things that kind of appall me, even from congresspersons that are supposed to be on intelligence committees, to start shooting off their mouth with clearly, I'm concerned because they don't know enough about intelligence to be on the committees they're sitting on. I'm sorry. They need to read a book.
Well, there you have it. And look, for me to ask a question like in the initial reaction once again, you know, why in the world would they be using a balloon? Okay, when a satellite could collect a lot of this stuff and human assets on the ground that are in motion, that are a little more, let's call it covert in nature, you know, could collect this information without attracting attention, without getting caught. Okay, it seemed very weird to me that they would use a balloon on us, you know, the United States. It just seemed so strange. Like, why would you do this? It almost felt like a blast from the past, you know?
It's almost a test, in a way. It's kind of like, how much can we get away with? Unless it was a mistake, you know, but it doesn't. If I had not seen that path that carried it over all the strategic weapon sites, I would go, well, maybe somebody just made a mistake and the wind caught it. But I will say one thing, Chuck. This is not just... This is a constant altitude stratospheric balloon. The first balloons of this nature that were ever used were developed by the Japanese and flown over the U.S. during World War II. and actually with explosives, and we were very concerned that they were going to carry biowarfare devices. Mm-hmm. We experimented with constant level stratospheric balloons and flew hundreds of them over the Soviet Union for photo collection during the late 1940s and early 1950s.
Right.
These are really big balloons. They carry a very heavy equipment package. These days, we use them to carry telescopes. Mm. I've had one land actually not far from me a few years ago, and it was a two-story telescope.
Wow.
So these are not just your average balloon. And this one in particular, if you've seen pictures of it, it had solar panels on it. Mm-hmm. So this thing is drawing a lot of power, relatively a lot of power, not just working off a battery. So the reason why you would do that, ideally, is you're at a much lower altitude than a satellite. You've got equipment on board that you're supplying with a lot of power, so it can do a lot of broad spectrum collections, but you can power a lot of equipment, which means the more equipment, the more sensitivity you have, the more data that you can collect. So this was unlike the previous things that we've seen. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like a step up, and I don't know. My impression is the Chinese have gotten to the point over the last 5 or 6 years that they think that they can literally do anything they want to.
Right.
And I think they made a mistake.
Well, I think so too, but it's just so strange to me because I thought of those infamous balloons from World War II, and I said to myself, this seems like an antiquated thing that, you know, maybe a nation that doesn't have the budget for the higher level stuff would do, you know, which to me is not China. China has the assets to and the technology to employ the best of the best, I'm thinking. You know, maybe
China does everything. China's approach with what appears to be an unlimited budget. We know the group that launched this balloon. It is the same strategic reconnaissance group that runs their satellites. They have a whole spectrum, everything from drones to balloons to satellites, and China is at the point where they literally do overkill with this stuff. I mean, every approach that you can possibly think of to do, they're funding and doing. So it's their intelligence collection is extremely comprehensive, and I suspect to them this is just part of the big picture.
Well, and there you have it, right? So it is part of an overall program. It's not just something that stands alone. And I put the link to the U2 article in the chat room at Ocelli.com. It'll also be in the show notes, along with some other relevant articles about the discussion tonight. But it just struck me as so strange, you know, to begin with. And again, it's because I'm not familiar entirely with all of what would be used against someone like us. I did think that this would be more appropriately used, to monitor Taiwan, to monitor things that are closer to them in the region. And I thought to myself, this is also a very long distance. And then when we discover that this thing went over Alaskan airspace, right, and then went into Canadian airspace, and then, you know, because that was the other weird thing about it, is it sort of showed up geographically. The way it was reported, it was like, boom, it's in the middle of the country, you know? Like, how in the world did you get there? Now, once I saw the flight path, I'm, like, even more confused by it. But, look, we don't need to focus on this so much because I think this lays open the discussion, right, about what's really happening here in the, I don't want to say Cold War, because, again, you know, like we went back to the whole Cold War 2.0 discussion last time you and I got together, okay? And there are plenty of people that want to make this into a political issue that's, you know, very dependent on one party or another. But in reality, the conflict, the competition, the spying, all of this, none of this is new. But something has changed in recent times here because, I mean, we also had the experience of the drones, right? Where, what do they call that? The Huawei technology that ended up, you know, embedded in some of the stuff that was purchased from China and was used by, you know, U.S. government and things like that. And then they couldn't get rid of this thing, you know, the back doors in the program. Clearly, they had, you know, voluntarily introduced a Trojan horse, so to speak, into our electronic intelligence sphere, if you will. And there was a mistake made there, apparently. I mean, according to what I understand, not saying I know the whole story here, but there's a lot going on, Larry. So
strategy, I don't know if you would really say a strategy or an attitude that they have been showing more and more over the past few years with the growth of their military power. One of the things that is happening is because of their economic power, which came first, right? You would think someone who is so highly successful in the economic sphere would leverage that. And they were. And indeed, becoming very influential just through economic power. Mm-hmm. And they were positioned, say, in the Philippines of literally moving the Philippines out of the U.S. sphere of influence into the Chinese sphere of influence. But in the last couple of years, they have been so aggressive in Philippine fishing grounds and territorial waters and that actually, within the last month, the Philippines has allowed the U.S. rights to re-enter several Philippine bases that we had been banned from because the military threat from China is becoming so obvious. So the Chinese are not playing this game the way the Russians were playing this game. The Chinese are really establishing themselves in such a dominant military position that I think it is more or less giving them the impression that they can do what they want to do. There's a phrase that's now being used in China, and it's something called the wolf warrior philosophy, mm-hmm. which really says that if you behave so outrageously and so physically with so much power that you literally do what you want to do. You don't worry about finesse. You just go forth with brute force, and that's a scary thing. But their approach has been up until what, a year ago? Their approach over the past several years has been much more in the military domain than the political domain, if you will, which was where Russia was playing for some years.
Well, right. That is the huge notable difference between the Russians and the Chinese regarding the entire game, where, you know, Putin has been on the world stage trying to make his points. You're not really hearing as much, at least from what I can tell, from the Chinese government regarding all this. I mean, we do hear about the incidents, right, the near misses, this and that. Of course, there's still a conflict, but it did seem to be a lot more finessed up until very recently. So, you know, one does ask why that happens, but one also has to ask, you know, what is the thing that changed here that has caused this, I don't know, it's a shift in posture, really. I mean, a methodology, I'm almost reminded of the madman philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. Because, and this was the idea that Nixon said, look, if I am seen as totally ready to just go full on and bomb the hell out of people, then they'll fear that I'll bomb the hell out of people, you know, and therefore they'll treat me differently. And there are various nations that take on this posture. Usually it's short-lived, but for a while, it's like if I just seem to be very dangerous in a way, and I seem to be, you know, extremely sophisticated, and I seem to be extremely strong, and I project that forward, that will indeed change the way that I am interacted with on various levels They'll change their tactics with negotiation. They'll change what they're willing to surrender. They'll change, you know, et cetera, right?
Chuck, it's great that you brought that up, because that raises something that I have seen no commentator anywhere at all in the media present.
Okay.
What they have done, there were several stories that were written at very banner headlines that this might have been a mistake on China's part because, you know, China, Blinken was about to go there. There was to be a new round of negotiations with the U.S. Mm-hmm. It was thought that maybe they were looking to kind of get through some of this stuff. And so maybe this was a mistake. Maybe somebody within the military did it and Z didn't know about it. Or, you know, that sort of thing can happen. So maybe this is a mistake and they're fumbling around trying to deal with a mistake that jeopardized a policy they were pursuing. But what you brought up is far more interesting to me, because it is, if you know there's going to be another negotiation, look at it 180 degrees. I'm going into negotiation and I'm going to do something outrageous. Just like Nixon was going to negotiate with the North Vietnamese, let's do something outrageous so they don't, you know, that gives me a leverage in negotiation, because they're concerned. They're in a position of weakness now.
Yeah.
I have atomic weapons. They don't. What if the scenario behind this balloon was exactly that? Z is going into negotiations, and this is a test. He wants to know just how much the U.S. is willing to give, how much he can get away with. So he flies this balloon, and if this balloon, whom our military knows what's going on, if this balloon does allow to pass all the way over the United States and on its way, it's a test. He knows that we're not going to really object whatever we say. You know, we can say whatever we want about Taiwan. We can say anything we want about those islands. But if we don't respond physically to this balloon, he's in the driver's seat. And
you're
I've
right.
heard nobody express the possibility that the outrageousness of the balloon might really have been a test for those negotiations.
Right. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a little break here, because I want to get deeper into this subject about projection and what that could mean in general, all right, for negotiation, posturing, positioning, when it comes to things like this. I mean, there's a very street-level way to look at this as well. You won't get the street-level perspective from Larry Hancock necessarily, but maybe I'll throw it in. We'll see if it makes sense, because, after all, political regimes and gangs sometimes share characteristics. But we'll get into that in a minute. And stick around, The Ocelli Effect with author Larry Hancock, discussing this whole issue of China and the active and other measures that are currently in motion. We'll continue after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times, and reveals never before published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Revelation through conversation.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into the Ocelli Effect.
Ocelli.com.
So we continue the discussion with author Larry Hancock, the author of various books, as I've said, and definitely there'll be links in the show notes to not only the discussion tonight and relevant articles, etc., but also to his work, larry-hancock.com. Go there, find his books on Amazon. There's a couple other sites where you can get them as well, and I'll give you those. I endorse, advise, and did a whole series on Larry Hancock's books on this show. And he occupies more spaces than any other author on my bookshelf. So we already know what I think of Larry Hancock and his writing and his analysis and his thoughts about the behavior of the intelligence apparatus in this country, but also elsewhere. And now we got to go elsewhere, because the point I brought up before we went to break, I think is relevant, but I want to clarify it a little. I'm not saying that China is behaving, or Nixon behaved in any way, like China. All I'm trying to make the point of is that it's about projection. And, you know, even if you take things down to a street level, and I do mean a street criminal thug level, you know, what is it? Your reputation, the thing that you're out there pushing, right? If people think that you are too dangerous to mess with, they don't mess with you. Now, I'm not saying that China was trying to do the thug thing here, although maybe you never know, but it's not necessarily about that. Maybe it's about projecting dominance. Maybe it's about projecting, well, we have so many things going on. Yeah, you caught one. They might have even, you know, strategically thought, let's let them catch this. Let's let the American people understand. And this is why I brought up the concept of a psychological operation. And, you know, this could be mainly for that, or it could serve multiple purposes. It could be to assert something in order to show that, look, we're a little more dangerous, we're a little more relevant, we're a little more active than most of you thought we were. And I think they certainly got their money's worth out of our representatives because of all the debate, all of the accusatory stuff back and forth, and apparently the idea that Trump had three balloons in his administration. You know, I'm being shown articles now even that maybe that wasn't true. Maybe, you know, who knows, honestly. But I'm willing to go with maybe this is the first one. I'm willing to go with maybe there was 20 of them we didn't know about, and maybe this has been going on a long time. I'm willing to go in any direction because I always accept that the public is not informed wholly about this. But this particular situation, the public was informed, and maybe that was the point of the operation. Okay, because obviously this thing could be jammed and taken down. And oh, by the way, with the takedown, I do want to get Larry Hancock's thoughts about that, because I thought it strange that they would shoot it down the way they did, even though that's what people were calling for. And we heard the, you know, explanation that, look, we don't want to shoot it down over a population. Okay, safety, I understand. We don't want to shoot it down in this circumstance, that circumstance. But finally they did, and they took it out, and I thought it was curious the way they took it out, the way they've collected it, the way they made a show of it. And make no mistake, that is part of the equation as well. Whether from the Chinese perspective, that they want the Americans to make a show of it, or that the Americans want to just let you know, as I said, you know, like, what's his name, Hertlinger came out and said, look, I'm very sure that this was all jammed. I'm very sure we have this situation well in hand, whether he's active military or not. That is exactly the story he's going to tell, whether it's true or not. And that's his job. He has to do that. But all of these things are in play, and it gets very confusing. So I want to get into this a little more, Larry, and talk about the idea that sometimes it's not necessarily about the thing itself, but about what that represents, what it projects, what conversations it begins. Or am I out of line even bringing all this up, Larry?
No, and I think we can extend that. When we were talking about signals intelligence earlier, part of signals intelligence, part of Faraday, in other words, sending something near or over your adversary as a test, you don't need to bomb them, you don't need to attack them, you're testing their capabilities. You're testing their capabilities to detect you. You're detecting, are they going to respond to you? You know, can they? Are they? Will they? You know, how aggressive are they going to be? That's all part of the military aspect. But there is another aspect which you're bringing up, and that is, what is their political response going to be? Not just their military response, because the military is under control of the political governance, okay? Even if it's a dictatorship, whatever, it's under control. So, you know, when the Soviets shot down a commercial airliner over the Far East, the pilot did receive final instructions to do it. Okay, so the other part of not, is testing the military response, but it's testing the response of the people that are in charge. And I find it interesting, again, the talk up to this point has been, well, maybe somebody made a mistake. Maybe it was, okay, fine, miscommunication within the Chinese bureaucracy. But look at the timing for flying this extremely visible, highly visible stratospheric balloon right over the middle, you know, over the, most of the continent. It is right before negotiations, as we were talking about, and is right after a new Congress is seated. Mm-hmm. So you're going to test two or three things. You're going to test, how does this affect diplomacy? Are they going to ignore this? Maybe they won't even bring it up. Maybe they'll attempt to suppress it. Oh, it was another UFO. Okay. Or, you know, maybe it's so visible it's going to create a real, some chaos within their political system. How powerful, you know, it's a test. And I find it, the timing tends to persuade me that it was a test of the political response, of the U.S., not just a signals intelligence or military test, just because of the timing. So from your perspective, what you were just talking about, I absolutely think it's projection, but it's projection with intent. Like, I'm going to learn. It's worth it to me to maybe take some embarrassment to find out just how, you know, so far, if you look at some of the encounters between Chinese and U.S. aircraft, we had one incident where the Chinese actually hit one of our aircraft and forced it down. We made no particular response. We just negotiated it and the crew back. We have been quite low key in our responses to their responses to our surveillance. You know, we have not sent fighter escorts for our aircraft. We have not, you know, we've not done any of that. So this is kind of, it raises the ante. Like, what's the most dramatic thing that we could do to see if the Americans respond to anything in a military fashion? Well, I don't. Maybe they thought, oh, we'll just test because we think they won't. I think they, when we actually did shoot it down, I think they were shocked. That just my personal opinion. I think they were surprised. It's a lesson for them, but I think it was a bit of a surprise that we did it in the way that we did it, where we did it, with the degree of control that we exercised. A lot to be learned from that kind of response.
Right. And look, make no mistake, it could have also been a particular political test because of the fact that it's clear to the rest of the world, just like it is to us, that, frankly, we have a bit of a political divide here in the country. And indeed, leadership might be being challenged. The seating of the new Congress, which is the opposition party to the executive at the moment. So could this be a test, literally, of exactly how much Biden gets told what to do by his opposition? I don't think that would be the sole reason for it, but it might have been one of the calculations here. You know, there might be 15 objectives that they might have sought to achieve with one balloon. Theoretically, I'm not saying I have any insight on this, but what I'm saying is you could look at it all different ways. The military response, like you said, is one aspect, and then you have the political aspect. You might also have the social aspect. Let's see what the people, right, around the country are going to say. I mean, it's not like you can't monitor social media. Okay, let's see what TikTok videos come up, right, you know, regarding the balloon. And I know there were thousands of them. What do the American people think of this? Do they see China as dominant? Does that mean that we have leverage over them? We're not negotiating with them, but in some ways we're going to, because our products, etc. So there could be a business calculus to this. I'm just saying, all around, there are many different possibilities regarding the purpose and use for something like this, where you sacrifice, well, a balloon, which I'm sure that technology is not cheap exactly, but it's also not the most expensive way to beta test something and to test multiple things all at once. Or am I, again, out of line here?
Well, if they've learned one thing from the social aspect, from the whatever, other than a kind of thoughtful, in-depth, considering all the options discussion of it, what they've heard in the media is the very simple-minded, let's shoot it down or let's not, and how quick can we do it? You know, the discussion they have heard has not been a very informed discussion, let us say. But so, yeah, I think they've learned some things for it. And for them, it may well have been very worth the test. Just you mentioned the street level. And part of this thing is always, how hard can we push? What can we get away with? Mm-hmm. That's always the dynamic, and this, they have been pushing. This is the hardest push so far, and every time they push, they learn something.
Well, and there you go. I mean, is it invalid, though, and I wonder this as well, is it invalid, the idea that this was meant to be a silent weapon? This was meant to go on undetected. I can't see how they would imagine that this thing was... Yeah, go ahead.
That's they would know. They have the ability. Again, they have the same satellite capabilities in orbit that we do. They would know that our military had detected. For one thing, yes, there have been other balloons, but there is a big difference between a balloon carrying the payload that this sucker was. I mean, carrying something this large with this much metal in it, this much, it's going to generate a radar echo. I mean, that's just the way it is. So they are going to know that it's going to be detected. I don't think they would have ever, this could never be a covert activity. So they know it's going to be detected. Maybe there was a miscalculation in how well they could steer it. You know, maybe it wasn't supposed to be this, you know, obvious or threat, but they would know that the military would detect it. However, what they would test would be, is it reported by the military to the defense community, and then is it responded to by the administration? Mm-hmm. Because it could be reported just as other, I mean, let's face it, we know now virtually certainty that we had an incident off San Diego in a secure Navy test and maneuver area where what was almost certainly a Chinese contracted ship came in and launched a drone swarm against a series of our ships, flew the drones back onto the ships, and it left. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we did not respond at all to that. We did not even try to bring the drones down. We didn't pursue the ship. We were not on top of it. That's pretty darn aggressive. What is the next step? I mean, this is almost, if you can do that, you're going to have to really ramp it up to see what will they respond to. So, no, I don't think that they thought at all that it would be undetected. It, as you said at the start of this, if I just want to collect signals intelligence, there are much more covert ways to do it. It had to be something beyond that, with some intent beyond, I'm just going to sneak through and do signals intelligence.
Well, right, and there's also something to the idea that, look, the Air Command in Alaska, and I don't remember the specific terminology, but there is a separate Air Command that answers to, you know, the overall Air Command that handles all the stuff for North America, but there's a separate one in Alaska. Now, they had to have detected this if the flight path is as reported. They detected this. They didn't do anything about it because from a military standpoint, there is the observe and report sort of status that things take on at first, right? Hostility is only authorized when it's supposed to be necessary. I mean, this is the way things are supposed to work, right? So Alaska let this go through Alaskan airspace and into Canadian airspace. Now, they probably, I'm speculating that they had to inform their allied, counterpart in Canada, hey, this thing is going to be in your airspace soon, or is in your airspace, to which Canada should have replied, well, yeah, we already know. And then they would observe and report for a while, right? Because Alaska might not be, I mean, I'm sure it has strategic significance. I'm not trying to downplay that, but it's not necessarily the key to our strategic defense grid, right? So this goes on, and then it enters the continental U.S. airspace. And that changes how the military is going to react, and that's when, indeed, we saw in public it was reported on, right? So I think the military was well ahead of the curve on this. They had to have been. What do you think of that? And did they not test what the process there, maybe? Would that not be part of the equation, too?
Yeah. Canada is part of NORAD. It's the North American Air Defense Command. Canadian officers sat in front of the screens at NORAD headquarters at Cheyenne Mountain. You know, it's a mutual defense system. We have shared radar feeds. We have shared, so yeah, I have no doubt they knew about it and that they were making the same, somebody in Canada was making the same judgment call. I think it's interesting. Most people don't realize that there has never been a standing fire on unidentified objects order. Mm-hmm. There is no weapons release order in place that says if you can't identify it, at first you have to actually classify it as a threat. There's a warning systems in place, a service system, that you have to report it as a potential threat. It has to go through the chain of command to the National Military Command Center. Somebody has to evaluate it, declare it a threat. Even then, weapons release, we saw this on 9/11. Mm-hmm. You send interceptors, you can do whatever you want to be in position, but you have to receive a Secretary of Defense order, presidential order, to free weapons and fire.
Well, that's describing the general posture again of the military, I described it as the observe and report generalized, you know, phrase there. That is what the job is at first, right? Observe this thing, get the information on it, find out what it is, what it's doing, etc., and you got to report it back, and then it goes through the chain. I mean, this is the way this is done anyway. Regardless of where the thing came from or what the nature of the object is, it is, it exists, first of all. Then you got to figure out what it is and what the nature of the thing is. And that's all part of the, observe and report behavior pattern, right? I mean, or am I off here? I mean, that's what happens at first.
Right. This was this is all standard procedure. Mm-hmm. Nothing, I would say, again, nobody makes quick judgment calls unless it becomes known as an obvious threat. Even on 911, mm-hmm. the calls weren't 9/11. The calls weren't made quickly enough. We would like them to be, but there is a process that's followed so you don't make mistakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't take back a mistake. So, no, you're absolutely right. They followed the process, the Alaskan Command, then it came through Canada, then it came in NORCOM, which is the continental U.S. Took over, and they would all be reporting it and waiting. I think there was a NORAD commander who made a statement that made perfect sense to me, but people questioned it to me. He said, "Well, this, you know, it was not within my domain as a threat," and right. And that's true. Quite frankly, it wasn't a threat. A military threat. Nobody thought that it was carrying a bomb. Nobody thought it was carrying a weapon. It was an intelligence threat, mm-hmm. if you will. You could consider it a political threat. Somebody else makes those calls.
Mm. Well, and then it comes down to, you know, what happens next. So I didn't want to, you know, bog you down in that. I just wanted to make it real clear that there was a process followed here, you know, because a lot of people have oversimplified it and brought it down to, well, you know, the president simply decides and that should be what it is. Now, it can be, but that's not necessarily what goes on. First of all, he has to be informed by what these guys have observed and reported on to know what he's even dealing with, right? So,
and certainly they're going to give him advice, Chuck. I have no doubt, and again, people can say whatever you want. I have no doubt when he says he asked the military to tell him. Now, the military, it's not just the military. The questions that are being asked are the same ones we discussed earlier. Mm. You know, how do we put assets over this sucker to see what it's doing? We need to intercept signals. We need to collect data. We need to jam. You know, there are things that we need to do to neutralize it. You know, let's do that first. And there's a – we don't learn anything if we shoot it down mm-hmm. immediately. You know, we don't. We mm-hmm. don't know nothing about its targeting. We know it's not a weapon, but we don't know what they're even interested in. Quite frankly, I know people don't like it, but the fact that it flew in what now appears to be a control path mm-hmm. over our strategic bases, that's not the way stratospheric balloons behave. No. They have come up with some method to add some control over that stratospheric balloon that's new. And I've read some things that maybe it had some propellers on it, that's why it was drawing as much power, but I haven't seen anything so far that says that was natural. And mm-hmm. that would be very interesting. Like, okay, if it's not an imminent threat, you learn something first and then you do what you need to do.
Well, let's take it to the next phase then, right? Because then there was the back and forth and obviously the political football and the speculation in the news media. Should this be shot down? Should it not be shot down? The oversimplified discussion that you talked about earlier. You know, so that's going on. And at a certain point, Biden says, you know, look, I told them to shoot it down and they told me to wait. You know, that I should wait until. Now, what about the chain of events that lead to this thing eventually being shot down, you know, near South Carolina? I found it funny that there was like one guy standing on the beach with a cell phone that was like recording this. It seemed to be the one guy that got around to the media first with his cell phone on the beach.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Chuck. I usually don't make these sort of claims to have any sort of insight to the future or not, but mm-hmm. I posted online the first day that it was reported. Mm-hmm. I made a post that said, look, here's what's going to happen. Ultimately, this thing will be brought down within 5 miles of the U.S. coast, off the Carolinas, you know, off the East Coast there, mm-hmm. and it will be brought down in territorial waters, and we'll shoot it down eventually. Mm-hmm. And that's like one of the only predictions I've ever made in my life that came out the way I predicted it. But there was a logic to all of that. First of all, by that time, we knew that we had been jamming it. So mm-hmm. it's like there's no, it's not doing anything to us. We're actually collecting data on it. We have our assets in place. Jamming it could have occurred in several different ways. The U-2 is the most probable with the right sensor suite on it.
Which is the best way to neutralize, as you said, okay, so it's not a direct, you know, bombing threat or weaponized threat, but it is an intelligence threat. So now that's neutralized, and that would be the logical thing to do. Now we wait for it to be in a place where it can be taken down and not, you know, fall on somebody's head or, you know, in the middle of a town somewhere or whatever, right? So this all makes sense.
The hard drives. I have reason to believe that I suppressed it, so it didn't transmit anything.
Right.
But it very well could have collected it. And if mm-hmm. it had gone on further and they had managed to retrieve it at sea, it couldn't transmit, but it could store. Mm-hmm. So you really do need to bring it down and you need to get that storage, because that'll give you the perfect picture of what it was collecting or what it had collected. But, you know, shooting it down over land, your odds are... One of the problems is going to be, and we know this from past experience, mm-hmm. those big balloons are very, very hard to actually bring the balloon down in a controlled fashion. You can shoot holes all through the balloon. Some of them can be self-sealing. They will drift on in an unpredictable course. But what will happen is eventually the sucker will come down and it will crash land whatever it's carrying, which in this case was a pretty big structure.
Okay, so excuse me. Excuse me for undermining something that was reported in the media, which I did find comical, the idea that somebody might just come out with a gun and shoot it down. And I thought that was pretty funny because it was like, you know, like I did think about it. I went, well, is that possible? You know, would that be something that could take it down? I mean, can I go outside with my rifle and shoot this thing down if I want to? I mean, and being over some of the areas it was over, I thought to myself, this thing could be shot down by somebody like that if it's able to be taken down by, you know, a small firearm.
It's at 65,000 feet, so you've got to have a pretty good range with your weapon, and it's going to take several holes.
Right. Okay. So a problem there with that whole idea. You're not reaching it with the hunting rifle you bought at Walmart. Okay. It just ain't working. I'm sorry. I just had to bring that up because I remember that being very seriously debated. What if someone shoots this down? You know, and I'm like, what do they have? And would you be able to, you know, how high up is this? That was my only issue, actually. I wasn't sure if it was low enough. Maybe somebody could shoot it, but I'm saying to myself, that high up in the air? What effective range does a bullet have? You know?
And as a matter of fact, the reason we took it down the way we did, again, it's... Okay. First, you have to ask yourself a couple questions. So, we know one of the issues, if you just start blowing the balloon apart, you're not, you know, it could drift on for a ways. It's unpredictable. So, the ideal thing is to bring the instrument package down as softly as you can over water, let's say, but you need to do it in a very controlled fashion. So if anybody is, and there's some very good video footage of the shoot down, actually they use two F-22s as the primary interceptors, backed up by two F-15s. They fired an AMRAAM missile to hit not the balloon, but the connection between the instrument package and the balloon, okay, so that the instrument package goes into a dead straight downfall. And it's one of the most... I've written a lot about military operations that didn't go as planned. This sucker was planned to the, like, inch. They had enough data links on that, so they were actually advising the pilots, like, if you don't fire on this tick, it'll be a mile east of where we want it. You know, that's how precise it was. Mm-hmm. And so that was... Bringing it down was not just shoot down the balloon. It's get that instrument package down with the best chance of recovery, do it in our territorial waters so there's no argument, and that's what they did.
See, now, here comes a speculative question, because this is problematic in my mind. Now, if the Chinese had to assume that at some point we would try to take control of this thing or take it down, you know, then they won't necessarily have the most, you know, okay, assuming that we get a hold of this thing and it's intact pretty much, and now we can see exactly what it was doing, what it was relaying, what it was storing, could we assume that they would have thought of that, and maybe they're putting something in there that's, you know, gives us a false lead towards something? You know, is that a possibility too?
Yeah.
You know, I ask that question openly.
And I've seen that posted. I think it gets back to the question, if this was purely a political test,
mm-hmm,
it could have been a dummy. Maybe it's not transmitting anything. Maybe it's not collecting anything. It's more a question of, are you going to shoot it down? You know, so maybe they're... Now, all that power, those photocell panels, that seems like a little bit of overkill for that. Another option is... They could have had a pretty complex sensor suite on it and not stored any data. So we wouldn't be able to collect the actual data. Maybe it's, well, if they didn't transmit it to a satellite, then it's just not there. They didn't store it. They did, you know, real-time transmission. So we might not find the data. But I find it improbable that you would not have the collections devices, the you know, the devices that would tell you the scanners, what frequencies they were looking at. If you didn't, then you know it's purely a test of will, quite frankly. So I saw someone post, well, maybe they wouldn't have their most modern electronics. This is still, when all is said and done, it's like radio. I mean, it depends on what chipset you're using, what spectrum capabilities you are. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, some advanced entangled photon thing. We're talking about radio, just very sophisticated radio.
Okay. No, fair enough. I mean, but I just want to, you know, put it in its relative place. You know, what is it that we're looking at? Because I thought to myself, when you mentioned, you know, a collection of data, that it could have been used as a relay. But of course, to relay that information, now we see how the relay works, what frequency it was on, where they're sending it to. So, I mean, there's a variety of possibilities here for what could be collected. And I saw that too, where it was like a celebration, like, now we have some new knowledge. And I'm thinking to myself, is it really that new? I mean, it's almost strange that they wouldn't have been aware of what this package should have been to begin with. I mean, it's not like we don't have spies. It's not like we don't, you know.
Let me give you, this is pure raw speculation. Okay. But you mentioned earlier, we know that they have embedded electronics in cell phone transponders and towers. It would be fascinating to know if that balloon had been specifically designed to interrogate embedded Chinese tech.
Ah, like the Huawei stuff that I was talking about before.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that would be really high risk. But, I mean, I think it's hard to say that they're not risk takers at this point in time.
Well, and here you go. Maybe there's some hookup, and I know this will sound ludicrous, but, you know, sometimes you hear things in the future, and you go, wait a minute, I heard something crazy like that before, but, you know, what if it has some sort of link up to some centralized connection that goes to your TikTok stuff, you know, where there's, you know, very likely some sort of surveillance built into stuff like that. You know, we know factually that there, you know, that thing has become huge. And of course there's a discussion about banning it and all that. But what about if it's interrogating some sort of asset that's been collecting TikTok information? As silly as that sounds, it's a possibility. And the stuff that they gave us regarding, you know, cell phone towers and the drones that were bought and all that, I mean, look, if you're going to implant a Trojan horse, it's going to have to do something. And it's going to, in most cases, do more than one something. Why not? It could be interrogating, you know, directly from something that's transmitted and triggered by a signal sent from this thing, right, to either the hardware or the software. Hey, look, we need that information you've been gathering now.
And we won't fly this balloon again until 48 hours before we invade Taiwan.
Yeah, well, there's that. But, I mean, I'm just saying.
Interrogating embedded equipment is absolutely. And I suspect if we were doing the job that I think that we're doing, we were not only looking at its relay, as you say, we were looking at its transmissions. It could have been doing just passive collections, or it could have been doing active collections. They shouldn't even tell us. You know, I would say I'm usually a big fan of transparency, but I don't even want to know that. That's a secret the military needs to keep.
Well, that's the other aspect, and I think we'll probably close out the discussion on this, because I posited immediately that, look, regardless of what they've told us, it cannot possibly be the entire story. It would be malpractice from a military standpoint and from an intelligence standpoint, or both. Or all of the above, right? To reveal all of what's actually happening, Larry Hancock. So the idea that the public doesn't know what's going on, well, on the one hand, yeah, that would be normal. That would be the proper procedure here in this case. Not to let us know all of this. Not to have it all reported. Nonetheless, I think some things were a little bit silly about it over the past, you know, week and everything, but still, the idea that, like, well, we don't know everything, you know, I really wish I would have heard more people say that when they were reporting on it and discussing it, is that, look, you got to remember there was only a certain percentage of this information that, even under all reasonable, ethical, proper circumstances, would be in the public arena to begin with. So, you know, there's something to be said about that as well, and I'm really pleased that you've gone a bit over an hour with me tonight. And look, I'll let you go on that because, you know, I want you to discuss it if you don't mind, and anything else you want to get to. And remind people, go to Larry-Hancock.com and all of his books, every last one of them, I'll tell you, is worth the price of admission, purchase, whatever. You know, and I appreciate Larry's work, his analysis, and it has been absolutely integral to any sober analysis that I've done on issues like this, and anything of consequence when it comes to, especially the behavior of the different apparatus out there regarding intelligence, but also military, political, everything, actually. The entire sphere, the entire many spheres of influence that do make the world go round, it seems. So, anyway. Larry, what about that, though? the idea that, you know, look, there's only a certain level that is going to be made available to the public here anyway. It is really insane to assume otherwise. You know, we don't have full transparency. We're not going to know everything that happened here. If there were 10 more balloons, maybe that's not going to be told to us. If this is a pointless thing, if this was a psychological operation, you know, whatever the intent is, I don't expect that we're going to know the full story about any single part of this event, let's call it. So go ahead, Larry.
I think that's absolutely true, and I think that full story includes the full story of what the Chinese have been doing. You know, we've gotten bits and pieces, but the full story of what the Chinese have been doing over the probably last 3 to 4 years, I'm all for transparency in government and transparency in historical records. But when you get into real-time events and real-time threats, mm-hmm. you got to be real. And no, you don't want to know it. You want the people that are responsible for your defense to keep it real, to keep it classified. You can get carried away with thinking, well, we need to know everything. We do, and on certain timelines. But when you're coming down, there actually are real national security issues that have to be treated that way. And my opinion would be this is definitely one of those things. So if you think the government isn't telling you everything about what the Chinese have been doing, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
So I actually have one more question. Sorry. How serious of an action is this? I mean, because some people, discussing it with me were saying that this is a very significant, upgrade in the behavior from China. This is a very aggressive looking thing. And to me, I see it as, look, what do? You float ideas. You float things out there to test them. I see it as more of a test than a threat, but others have told me it is more of a threat than a test. Do you have any comment on that, like what your thoughts are? And like I said, I'll close out on that with you, but we'll continue with the show after I take a short break here. But please.
I would see it, obviously, that balloon by itself as an individual, no matter how large and how sophisticated, it would only be something significant if we had not reacted to it. In itself, it's not a threat. Its passage, being able to collect information freely and carrying it on and letting them retrieve it somehow, that would be a threat. As it is, I see it more as a test, just one more step in their testing of the U.S. and our responsiveness. So I think where, Chuck, I might go off the... I'm not sure what else they could... This is kind of like the highest level test, the most obvious. Other than, sailing the Chinese Navy into the San Francisco Bay, with no notice, this is pretty blatant. So, threat, no. Severity of test, high.
No, fair enough. And I think it's also interesting to note that there is a context here for, floating something possibly over South America as well. Because here we go, maybe not into San Francisco Bay, but what if a friendly nation south of us, suddenly was able to accept the presence of a lot of Chinese forces? That could be seen as a much greater threat than this, easily. So, I tend to agree with you as well, and usually do. Again, Larry-Hancock.com. Many, many books, many, many titles. Creating Chaos, Surprise Attack, Shadow Warfare. These are all relevant. In Denial. These are all relevant to the discussion tonight. Okay. But many, 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 many interesting things that you've written there and online. And, Larry, I really appreciate you taking the time with me tonight to go through this.
I enjoyed it. Thanks, Chuck.
Anyway, guys, stick around. The Ocelli Effect will continue after this.
StreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Mad Prophet of the Airways. I am here every Thursday, 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock Pacific time, right here on the Ocelli Radio Network, which is really one of the most, I think it's the gem in the landscape of media today. Please donate, buy a coffee and some smokes for my man, my producer, and the owner of this network, Chuck, today by donating at Ocelli.com. Keep it alive. Keep it alive.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, by author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War, by author Mike Swanson.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Revelation through conversation.
Ochili.com.
So the third and final segment of the Ochili Effect tonight here on Ochili.com, and glad to have you along. So I think that that was the most sober possible analysis we could have given regarding the whole balloon incident that dominated the news, dominated Jack Blood's show earlier for part of the time anyway, and has dominated discussions over the past week. So I think that that was fair enough. Quick general announcements about the network, etc. And I got my puppy Buster. Where'd he go? There he is. He's behind me, actually. I got Buster with me in the studio, just so everybody knows. I don't know if he'll bark or anything while he's in here. Probably not. He's pretty chill. But anyways, so regarding Ochili Effect and the network and all that, the Ochili and the Greek series is doing what it's doing. And we're going to record the second Sonic event shortly, and if you're signed up over there, you know about it. But otherwise, I do want to give a quick shout-out to Patricia B. again, who has been the longest-standing and greatest supporter of this show, and want to send out a little bit of love to you in case you decided to listen to my final segment tonight. And to everybody else who has contributed in some way to keeping us running. Do appreciate you all, and I didn't want to do that segment on Jack's show today about the ads, but we are offering the ads program. I've run commercials on it, and I'm actively trying to do that as well. We want to get this whole thing well funded so that we can expand. Actually, that would be nice. Anyway, so as much as you guys are contributing to it, anybody who has. Like our friend Jim there, who just dropped in something not too long ago, and our friend Creative Accidents, all the people who have contributed one way or another, whether you're a member at Ochili.com or if you're somebody who just throws something in the tip bucket every now and then, I appreciate you guys, and I'm always looking for ways to thank you. So do me a favor and write to me at either info@Ochili.com. And let me know things that you want to hear, need to hear on the show or shows, suggestions, whatever. The complaints department is not always active, but I do read that stuff too. Just saying, you can write to me there. You can write to me blindjfkresearcher@gmail.com. That also doubles as my PayPal address, and you can make contributions that way. Or if you want to get involved with the network, I am again going to open up the ranks a little bit and see what's going on. We have our friend Ray in that land down under helping us out with a lot of video stuff lately. He's doing a hell of a job as the BitChute curator and other work that he's doing. And also, as usual, Nature Boy, although you haven't heard him produce Wednesday night shows lately, he's doing other work for the network. There are active things going on. Also, I was told, finally, that the JFK conference will be scheduled for the weekend of the 17th in November, and I'm definitely planning on getting together with anybody who wants to meet us all down there. And I've been promised by BP he's going to take me on a road trip. I don't know how he's going to feel about me after spending a couple of days in a car with me, but I guess we'll find out. And so that's something that we hope is going to happen exactly on time. I haven't gotten the location from the Lancer organizers yet, but looking for it. And also, I'm looking to book some new guests and take care of some new things over here and release some of the re-release, I should say, some of the archive shows. Not just mine, maybe some other people's archive shows, stuff you might have missed earlier. And later on in the year, sometime after my birthday, I'm hoping I'll be able to have everything organized. I'm working on a lot of stuff here, guys. I'm working on the archives. I'm working on keeping the day-to-day running. and also looking to expand, doing Ocelli and the Greek as a separate thing, which is by subscription only at this point. That's $25 a month, and so far people have signed up for it, so what can I say? Nobody wants to sign up for my $6.99, but they're signing up for that. Good on ya. What can I say except that will be a unique Sonic experience, right? And continuing to have people on, whether I agree with them or not, as far as show hosts go, and some of the people that they bring on as guests, etc., etc. Stellar job. I got a very nice email about Chris Graves earlier today, and, you know, maybe I'll share that with him when I speak to him next, which, by the way, will be tomorrow, because I'll be doing his show live, or I'll be producing his show live anyway, at 6 p.m. tomorrow. And the Ocelli Effect call-in show will be live at 8 p.m. Eastern time as well. Although I kind of know what BPete's going to want to discuss. I haven't decided yet what my focus should be. Oh, and if you do hear this ahead of time and you want to tell me what my focus should be, not saying I'll definitely do it, but I will take it under advisement. Again, you can email me, blindjfkresearcher, all one word, at gmail.com or info@ocelli.com. So there it is. And if you want to get involved with the ads, you want to put out a message, you have something to promote, maybe we could work out a deal as well. That's ads, A-D-S, A-D-S at Ocelli.com. And we'll work it out. Anyway, so now that I've done a little bit of a commercial, what can I say? The State of the Union, I tried to sit through it, guys. I really did. I was going to go through it point by point. But, you know, garbage in, garbage out. I mean, do I want to say that the one plus for Trump's ridiculous State of the Union was that it was entertaining? It was kind of entertaining. This wasn't even entertaining. This was sad, pathetic. You know, I'm not always the let's pounce on the Democrat guy. I know. And it pisses some of you off. But what the hell, man? I mean, are you literally trying to surrender your side of the equation to the pussified version of what was? Is that what we're doing? I mean, if you believed in social justice and this is supposed to be your leader, you're in bad shape, man. You know, if you think you're a progressive or a liberal and this guy is the head of the more progressive, more liberal party, take stock. You're in bad shape. You're in real bad shape. I mean, you know, it was bad enough thinking you're a conservative and an idiot like Trump is your leader. This guy is beyond pathetic. I gotta say, I'm starting to want to side with everybody who just wants to pound on him like he's special. But he's not. He's just another symptom in the disease that is the system. That's right. It's not a disease within the system. The system is the disease. It's not a virus within the program. The program is a virus. Yeah, that's what's going on. That's all I got to say. I don't really care about the virtue signaling. Oh, they were talking about CRT. You know, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the nonsense. I don't even want to cover politics anymore. It's so bad. Because the only response to stupid is more stupid. I mean, how else do you better make an argument for the system has failed? Like Dave Mustaine said, kick the chair. Anyway, I'm done for tonight, guys. I don't even want to go any further. Larry Hancock did a good, coherent, sober job of analyzing something, and I'm so irritated. I don't think I can. So, a slightly shortened as opposed to extended Ocelli effect tonight, okay? Is that okay with you guys? Well, it's going to have to be. Because that's that. And no matter who you are, where you are, when you are, I am merely Ocelli. Participate in this experiment that we are currently on, and you are indeed the effect. Thank you, and good night.